Welcome to Micro College. My name is Jacob Hunt. I am the Executive Director of Thoreau College. We are a micro college located in the southwestern part of the state of Wisconsin. If you're listening to this late in 2025, we are currently accepting applications for our spring 2026 metamorphosis gap semester, as well as for our fall 2026 metamorphosis gap semester. We also have opened up applications for our summer 2026 Driftless Field School program starting on July 1st. Today on the podcast, I'm delighted to welcome two guests who are leaders, staff members, key people at Kroka Expeditions, which is a phenomenal, dynamic program for youth located in New Hampshire. So our guests today are Liz Jordan and Ezra Fradkin. Thank you guys for joining us today.
Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks, it's our pleasure.
Yeah, I'm really excited to learn more about Kroka. I've been hearing about it for years. I was had a career as a Waldorf teacher, and I knew a few people who participated years ago in Kroka programs. But yeah, there's always new wrinkles. So Kroka it works with youth, ages 9 to 21, I think is your top age now. Kroka provides unique wilderness programs centered around the cultivation of consciousness and altruistic will. The container of multi-day expeditions, traveling through wild places, is one that pushes human beings to experience vulnerability and reliance on community, both human and non-human. In return, they are rewarded with humility, compassion, elation, a sense of reverence for the natural world, and a deep feeling of belonging. Kroka is grounded on 120 beautiful acres of forest, wetland and farmland in Marlow, New Hampshire, known as the Kroka Village, which has grown over the years to become an intentional community of residential staff, a biodynamic farm, and a base camp that supports the magic of learning and growth to happen. They offer 8-week summer programs, spring and fall programs for school groups, and 2 semester programs that happen in the Northeast as well as in Ecuador, in far and wide. So all in all, the Kroka Village is a bustling place. So our guest today are Liz Jordan. Liz joined Kroka 4 years ago and is currently the semester director. She grew up in Northern Virginia and has worked as an educator in classrooms, in the wilderness, and in yoga studios throughout her adult life. Liz has studied many things in formal classroom settings, but feels the most alive and joyful when moving her body outside and crafting. Liz currently lives in Vermont with her husband, their 2 children, and other adorable creatures. Ezra Fradkin is a New England native. Ezra grew up in an intentional community in Amherst, Massachusetts. After high school, Ezra attended Kroka's Ecuador semester and went on to study sustainable food systems at Sterling College in Craftsbury Common, Vermont. He completed a master's in regenerative economics at Schumacher College in the United Kingdom in 2021. Ezra joined the Kroka team in 2016 and has since held roles ranging from expedition leader, program administrator and campus manager, and is currently serving as a co-director. Thank you both for joining here today.
Thank you.
As you know from listening to the podcast, we like to start with people's biographies and particularly their time as young adults. So I'm wondering, maybe Ezra, if we could start with you. Could you share a bit about where you were when you were specifically 18 to 21 years old? Where were you? What was influential in your life? And what stands out when you think back to that period?
Well, I attended a Kroka Equ Expeditions as a semester student at age 18. So I'll start my story there because it's very relevant to this podcast episode and where I am now. My senior year of high school, I was becoming disillusioned with the public school I was attending and had had a close friend, attend one of the Kroka semesters, the winter semester program, who came back from the program and said, "You have to try this thing called Kroka." And I looked into the program a little bit and I said, "No way, that's not for me. I have no interest in doing that." But as time went on and I was realizing that I needed a little change in my life, at that stage, I looked back at the program and I decided to enroll. So I attended the Ecuador semester at age 18, which was transformational because of the way it connected me to a close community of peers who were similarly driven by their own disillusionment with their conventional education and interested in a more dynamic and active and community-centric way of learning. And I think that stuck with me throughout. So similarly, coming back from that program and before, I really didn't have any interest in going to college. I didn't know if that was the path I was going to take. In fact, by April of my senior year of high school, I hadn't applied to any colleges and was really looking forward to this unknown and open space in my life. But then I learned about Sterling College in Craftsbury, Vermont, and I learned that they had rolling admissions. I went to visit there, and I realized that everything that I was interested in learning about and engaging with in my not going to college, I could actually do at Sterling as a student. And I really found that to be the case. So as I went to college there the next fall, and I studied there for 3.5 years, and really found it to be a terrific dynamic place where I could lead my own education. I had access to the campus and the landscape. I had access to the faculty, and I could be self-directed in my learning, which I think ultimately at that age is what I was looking for.
I mean, your story is an interesting one, because you are, maybe a something we're hoping to build through the micro college movement here. You have really availed yourself through many different examples of holistic, alternative, different kind of forms of higher education, ranging from Kroka to Sterling, and then also Schumacher College. These are both people listen to the podcast we've heard about before. So yeah, that's a thank you for representing that possibility. Cool. Liz, what about you? What were you during that period of your life, and what were the big influences?
I think so. I have a very different story, and it sort of has three chapters to it, and it feels a little bit more like climbing out of like the pit of mainstream culture, having grown up in the suburbs of DC and gone to an enormous public high school where 30 years ago the gap years maybe were happening, but not in the culture that I was in. And I'm the poster child for someone who needed a gap year, but didn't know they existed yet. And so somewhere, and I was one of these students who did really well by the measures, right, that were placed on me, but those didn't make me feel alive. And I remember, somehow a brochure for Warren Wilson College found me in this enormous high school in suburban DC. And I saw it, and it was the only school I applied to. I was like, that's, I don't know why, but that's where I need to be. And so I went there for one semester and I said, this is very much the right place for me, but it's not the right time. And I left. But that, so I consider there's like three steps of sort of like crawling out of this trajectory. And that was one. And I remember going to Warren Wilson, and it was like, things started to expand, and I had relationships with professors. That were, engaging and personal and intellectual, unlike those didn't exist in enormous public schools, right? And it was like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing, right? That would be like the thing. I didn't know that existed. And that's where I started, on the outdoor education field, was at Warren Wilson College and taking classes in whitewater paddling. Who knew, right? You could do those things. And then a year and a half later, I found myself backpacking around Europe, and that was the next. That was sort of my gap year, was doing that with some friends. And again, my worldview expanding into this sense that there's more, right? And this connection, this feeling that like things in my body felt different. It was like, oh, I feel alive in a way, I feel awake in a way that I didn't realize that I didn't feel before, right? And I think that's an interesting part of the step when you're not aware. Right. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, this is new. And then I think the third chapter for me was after college. So this is all in the window of being 18 to 20 for me. And when I did an AmeriCorps program, and it was where I was able to be useful. And that's where I learned how to use a chainsaw and how to sharpen an axe. And all of a sudden, I developed skills that I had realized like I had never had. I could play sports, right? And I could study. but I couldn't do useful, like what I would consider useful with my hands things. And that's where that happened. And that was another kind of layer peeling off for me. And then that entire, those 11 months were spent learning skills and being in service to a local community. Yeah. And that, all of that, I feel like was kind of crawling out and was like, okay. And it puzzled into a new picture of, yeah, a way of being.
Yeah, beautiful. So I've been asking this question to people for over 3 years now, and there are some patterns that emerge, depending on where people start from. But certainly, travel is a very common one, right? There's something about, opening horizons and encountering different cultures and people, and some sense of being, needing to be a little bit more self-reliant that's brought out. And yeah, some form of service work, the AmeriCorps or maybe something a little bit more informal that allows one to be in a relationship is also a common one. So, yeah, it seems like that makes a lot of sense. It seems like Kroka is bringing together some of these sensibilities in an intentional way. I'm excited to just to learn more about Kroka because there's a lot of pieces to it. So I wonder, if you could share a bit about, what is the origin story of Kroka? What are the programs that are happening right now?
Great, Liz, you want me to take this one?
I do.
So I'll start with the origin story. And Kroka was started in 1994 by two educators, Lynn Boudreau and Misha Goffman, who had met, both having their own separate paths in education, and had become together to the realization that there was not a form of education out there that was meeting the need of every student. Misha immigrated from the Soviet Union and had grown up in a family that spent every summer traveling through the wilderness, sewing their own tents and backpacks and foraging for mushrooms and really living off the land. So that tradition of bushcraft that came from his family culture in Russia became a piece of the story. And then coming to the United States, he worked as a gym teacher and also worked for Outward Bound. And in the public schools, working as a PE teacher, and then in Outward Bound, a very traditional method of American outdoor education. And Lynn was working at the time as a kindergarten teacher. And so they both had this educational background. They started Kroka as an after-school program to take kids outdoors, and it grew from there into a summer program, and eventually the first semester was born. The evolution of Kroka for the past 30 years has had that same organic nature, where it's always been a place of experimentation that's been responding to the times and the needs of the students and families that we serve. So our programs are constantly evolving and changing, and that's true for the semester programs as well. We run three main program areas. So one, we look at it as a three-legged stool. One of the legs of the stool is summer programs, and those are summer expeditions. They range from a week on the farm with young children to remote multi-week canoeing and rock climbing and backpacking programs. We work with school groups throughout the spring and fall that bring their classes to us for field trips. And then we run the semester programs, which is in many ways, it's the pinnacle of what Kroka has to offer, and it builds on all the other program areas. And the semester programs allow us to stretch out the work we do from a couple of weeks to a couple of months. And in that space and depth, add in the academics and add in the community living and add in extended travel and the development of real life competencies in our students. Those programs are very small. We accept 12 to 13 students per semester. So in a year, we have either two or three semesters. That's 24 or 36 students. So very, very small. And our team, of staff, everyone works with the students. So we all get to mentor one-on-one these students and support them in their journey. And in that way, the education at Kroka is really held in this net of community. It's not, and it doesn't feel like an institution. It's a like a group handful of adults receiving some young adults and students in our community and really working and learning along the way together.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And so the semester programs, as I understand it, they really the age range bridges, what we might think of as high school to post-secondary ages, 16 to 21. Is that yeah, is that what is the profile of these groups of 12 to 13 people generally? Where are they coming from and what are their backgrounds?
I'll speak to that.
Yeah.
So they we actually have some semester students even as young as 15 right now. So we're currently running two fall semesters at the same time, and one is for a slightly younger cohort, which is 15 to 18, and the other is for slightly older, which is about 17 to 20, or 21. And then we do run our winter semester with a cohort that does run from 16 to 21. So really that one has the greatest age range. And our students really, they are small groups and they come from all over. We definitely have, I think there's a core of every semester cohort that are students who have come to Kroka for years and years and years. So they the to them semester is sort of the pinnacle Kroka experience. They leave the longest summer program we have and they say, I want more of that. And so they come on semester, and that they really are kind of a crucial population because they really help, semester flow with ease and help, teach everybody all the processes. So that's one group. And then we really get, I mean, we have students who are sophomores in high school. We have homeschooled students, we have unschooled students. We have students who are taking a proper, like a formal gap year. We have students who tried college and want to transition to something, maybe to another college, but to something. And so they'll do a semester, on their way to something new. And again, really from all, we have a couple, again, our sample size is small, but we have, some international students in every cohort. We have usually one student from California in every cohort. And then generally, a bunch from the Northeast as well.
Yeah, so the sense you've got these summer program participants, people who've come back multiple times, that's important in building up a culture, right? Because that when it strikes me when I hear, as a person having run programs, that age range, those different backgrounds, like that's a project. You can't take that for granted that a group of people will gel and they've got especially age range, but also different educational backgrounds.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is amazing how every cohort has its own personality, right? It's like they are a character unto themselves. And you can't, I feel like from the admission standpoint, you try to anticipate things and you can't always nail it. But I think I've always been impressed with, despite or in spite of the age range from 16 to 21, everybody finds their place, right? In the community. And part of that, I think, is thanks to the expedition and the roles. We give big jobs in our sem well in all of our programs, summer programs and semester, which is someone's singular role on expedition that they become or work toward being an expert in. And I think when you start to have that sort of structure, it doesn't matter if you're younger or older. You have your place and you have your role in the community, and that's really, really helpful.
So these the fall and spring semesters, as I understand it, they're different lengths, and they're also. Can you describe what is the structure? How much time are people like off on expedition or and how much time are they at the farm there? And yeah, what would a student's kind of experience of time be?
Ezra, should I keep rolling? Are we good?
Keep rolling and then I'll jump in.
Okay, great. Okay, so we do our fall semester is 3.5 months long, so beginning of September to mid-December. And our winter semester is mid-January all the way to June. So that's 4.5, almost 5 months long. So it's quite a long semester. Every program at Kroka, so from summer programs to school group programs to semester start and end at the Kroka base camp. So even Ecuador, who spends 88 days in Ecuador, they still start and end at the Kroka base camp. And the hope there is to start to develop some connection to this place, right? They do chores every morning, they work on the farm, they help, depending on the season, they'll help put plants in the ground or help pull them out of the ground. They'll work to process food and even work to pay, do work in their semester that's actually going to benefit a future semester or a future summer program. Either splitting wood or stacking wood or, picking the food that will be dehydrated and taken on winter trail. So there's some, threads to connect everyone's experience there. So the base camp rhythm really follows a pretty rigorous daily schedule of early chores before breakfast, and then breakfast. Then we have academic classes in the morning, and then fitness training, lunch, and then the afternoons will be spent either doing a handcraft of some sort. Our Ecuador semesters make their own backpacks from scratch. They're beautiful. Our other semesters haft the handles of their knives, and actually have a ritual where they make the handle and make the knife, and they give it to somebody else on semester. So there's some ceremony around that. And then, or doing, service projects in the community or at Kroka as well. So that really holds the group through kind of the beginning and the formation of the community. And then about 3 weeks in, I think that's consistent almost for every semester. About after 3 weeks of base camp, the groups leave on expedition. Our winter semester, for the past couple of years, we've made a commitment to trying to leave Kroka and return to Kroka all by our own power. And if not by our own power, then using public forms of transportation and not personal cars. And again, like Ezra was saying, we try to respond right to what's happening, whether it's in the climate, whether it's, with winter, with snowpack, and make, new itineraries and new projects from there. So they leave at 3 weeks into semester on foot or on skis, and they don't return again until the end of May. And so
Amazing.
they're on expedition the entire time, taking, layovers every couple weeks, sitting out or sitting in mud season. And doing, taking that time to do more studies and more crafting, and then expeditioning again all the way back to Kroka. So.
So that's amazing. I think the first thing I ever heard about Kroka was that winter to spring kind of expeditioning. Maybe just to set the context for people listen to the podcast from all over the world. What you describe base camp, right? What kind of place is it? This farm in Marlin, New Hampshire. And then from that base camp, on their own power, what sort of places do they go, and what are the experiences they might have?
So the base camp is, I think you said, 120 acres, give or take. It's farm and forest land, and it's part of the Northern Forest. We have a little slice of land that has a, we're in southwestern New Hampshire, but at a high elevation with a little clump of boreal forest, a very special form of nature with cliffs and beaver ponds around here. And then we have what we call Kroka Village, which is the place that students live while they're here. It's a primitive village made of traditional hand-built structures that range from canvas wall tents, yurts, small log cabins, and the earthen lodges, which come from the Cree tradition of pole structures mounded up with earth that are living structures. All of the base camp has no electricity or running water, and it mimics life on expedition. So while students have some more comforts that they are in an indoor space for class, and they have access to a shower when they're at base camp after they exercise, but the basic structure of the way they live, if they are washing their hands, the water is water that was carried from the stream, so you can't turn the tap on all the way, or the bucket's gonna run out. And when they're cooking their meals in the base camp, they're cooking everything on the open fire. And so they have to get gather and process firewood as a part of daily life. And that lifestyle of living in the village prepares them to be on expedition because they've already given up some of the comforts of home in being here. And from here, that winter semester that Liz is talking about, and the majority of our programming takes place in New England in that same northern forest, which continues across New Hampshire, Vermont, and Maine. There is a network of winter trails, some of which are snowmobile trails, some of which are footpaths, hiking trails like the Appalachian Trail, and some of which are designated cross-country ski trails like the Catamount Trail in Vermont. And it's the work of each winter semester navigator to piece together these trail networks to get from point A to point B in their destination. And we use traditional forms of winter travel, traveling on skis and carrying a lightweight canvas tent made of Egyptian cotton, a portable titanium wood stove that gets set up every night. They gather evergreen boughs to lay as the floor of the tent. And so it is very similar to that base camp they were living in. Those traditions carry forward, but every day they take it down, pack it up, and travel a little farther north. And then in the spring, as the snow melts and that snow melt starts to course down the rivers from the mountains and into the bigger waterways, they do water travel, canoeing or rowboats or sailing down in different river systems each year in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and sometimes into New York State. Those empty out into Lake Champlain, the Hudson River, the Penobscot River, and then the home travel in the spring is done on bicycle.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think that we've done, we do expeditions here 5 days or so on canoe or hiking here at Thoreau College. I've led expeditions of different kinds myself a little bit, and to travel across a landscape in the modern world on your own power is it's transformative, really. Like, especially for thinking about technology, thinking about agriculture, thinking about ecology, right? We go too fast usually to see what's going on. So to do it for that long, for a whole semester's worth of travel like that is really a remarkable thing to offer. Yeah.
Yeah, to be able to see the same landscape unfurl and to learn the trees
Right.
winter time without leaves and then watch them put on their buds. And really it slows the pace of life down when you were so used to the kind of travel where you get on an airplane and you go somewhere and suddenly you're in a different climate. But to actually take the time and watch the spring buds unfurl.
I think that's something too that is really special about that particular semester is that you are also moving with the season. And so there's this flow to, how we try to make an itinerary that is about emergence, right? And so, and in winter, the winter semester, you get to live it with
Yeah.
spring and with the buds. And it's like, in every, I realize we're talking a lot about the winter and we still have these two fall semesters too, right? Where they're going, down the canyons of Utah into the borderlands, and our Ecuador semester is, in the Andes on, bike packing and on the rivers and then, climbing, mountaineering. And they all work through this flow, right, of taking the self and the individual and becoming a part of a group, and forming that group. And then that group learning how to function and how to emerge into a larger community. And then ultimately, the hope is that that community then, or that group, then learns how to emerge, into the world, taking everything they've learned about how to be a member of a community, how to be a member of expedition, and can really apply that to their life after semester.
Yeah. So yeah, let's talk about those. I mean, so you those semesters, whether they go to Utah or Ecuador, they also start with that same experience there in New Hampshire. So how do you prepare someone to be in a very different, environment? I mean, they're going to get on an airplane and have that transition. And then, yeah, how does that translation happen?
With the Ecuador semester in particular, we're fortunate to have a partner school in Ecuador who we work with, and we wouldn't run that program if it wasn't for that school. So that school really grew out of Croca many years ago. It's run by three Ecuadorian families, and those families come to Croca in the summer and work on our summer programs, and they are here with the students in the month of September, whether it's them or other staff from Ecuador. So our campus in the summer is m richly multicultural with staff from all around the world, but especially from Central and South America. And those staff are the ones working with the students, preparing them for their cultural studies in Ecuador. They're taking Spanish classes, but they're also just immersed in the the cultural life that comes from those communities.
That's cool. Yeah. Great. Yeah. So what are some of the things that you observe that happens to someone who goes through an experience like this?
Oh, one word that comes to mind, and this is straight out of the Velveteen Rabbit, is this becoming real, right? And the way, the what is the scene in the Velveteen Rabbit where all the like the velveteen is rubbed off, right? And they look a little shabby, and they look a little maybe a little worn, but they're real, right? And that's very much, I think. They might be a little shabby. They may have, some facial hair and long hair, and their clothes could be close to threadbare by the time they get to the end of semester. And they have this, I mean, I guess I'm going to speak almost bodily. They have an uprightness to them that, well, I mean, one of the most beautiful things at our graduation ceremony is for them to be witnessed by the community of alum, their friends, and their families, and they all see it. There is this thing, right? They're radiant, their eyes are sparkling, and they have it's like this inner light and uprightness, right? That is unmistakable. And that is something that happens. Again, more bodily. Ezra, do you want to add to that?
Well, I'll just say the other side to that, and I don't know if you experienced this, Jacob, at Thoreau College as well. When the students have been living as such a tight-knit community, it's very hard for them to transition out of that community. And so I know you're going to ask about what are some of the challenges that we face, but one question I think is true for all the micro colleges in this podcast and this movement is how to take something that is a semester long or a year long and help students turn that into their lifestyle that they can take with them so they don't lose the radiance and the uprightness that Liz is talking about. It's really difficult.
Yeah, it wasn't so easy for the Velveteen Rabbit either, right? Something you need a fairy godmother to come along and I'll do that. But yeah, no, that is certainly is a common theme. Yeah, these yeah, people are transformed and they are empowered in many ways, but there is a transition to be navigated for sure. Yeah. So
Think, the experience that they've had on the Croca semester is incredibly unique, and it's shared by that relatively small but growing circle of alumni, and that helps that they are very close-knit and they find connections and find future schooling and careers and places to live and travel companions through that network who have all shared that same experience over the years.
yeah. So I wanted to, earlier on, Ezra, you mentioned one of the things that your participants are able to experience is a very, a close, mentorship relationship with your staff. And I wonder, I've gotten to know just a little bit more about Kroka recently through some of your current and former expedition leaders and younger staffers. Our Thoreau College students a couple weeks ago were up in the Boundary Waters with a former Kroka staffer who just did a marvelous job. But I'm wondering, yeah, could you describe your team there and how I think the description of the base camp there is also as an intentional community and in a sense you've got an intergenerational learning situation from the summer camp for young children all the way up to the young adults who are helping to lead these programs. What's your what is the what are the people like there who are helping to lead this?
So we're really blessed by people. I think it's one of our strengths, and it's one of the best parts of the job for Liz and myself. Speaking for you, Liz, is the people we get to work with who are just fantastic, and they're so dedicated to this form of transformative education and so willing to be flexible and adaptable as things need to change because there's this common purpose and mission behind it. We do try to recruit staff from within the alumni circle. And in that way, Something we're recognizing more and more is that Kroka is not only a short-term experience, but it's a lifestyle that can really touch a family from age 9 all the way into adulthood, and making those opportunities for students who have come to Kroka to come back in a staff role to make those more prominent and intentional is something we're working towards. So some people are alumni who come back because they've gone out into the world, developed skills, and they have something now to teach. We do most of our staff recruitment through word of mouth. So people just come to us. They just appear to us, and it's a gift when that happens, because our work relies on having outstanding people of character and willingness to commit to this lifestyle so that then the students will embrace it. We really strive for authenticity across the whole program. We don't want there to be any part of it that's contrived. And if you're leading the semester program or leading a Kroka program, you're asking your students to give up their creature comforts, to give up their sense of self and join a community. And staff have to be willing to do that as well. And so the staff who live here in the summer is when our community is at its fullest. We have 60 residential staff in the summer. They all share one washing machine and one shower, and they eat all their meals together and take turns cooking. And they're all up every morning, first thing, 6:30 in the morning for morning chores. Everyone has a job to do, and we hold our staff to high standards so that they can then hold the students to those same standards authentically.
Wow, I had no idea there's that many people. That's a big stat. Yeah, amazing. I'm really resonating also with that experience of having these remarkable, people show up, right? From the universe. It's one of the very encouraging and really powerful experiences that I've experienced here as well. Our fellows, and sometimes they're alums, and sometimes they're not. Like, how they found their way to us is really remarkable.
And I love that you tell the story of the former Kroka staff who is guiding your students in the Boundary Waters. It is, we think of it, one thing we, what can we offer the world? And people are only going to stay here for some time. They're often staff are transient, seasonal workers. They're trying to get a lot of experiences. And if one thing we can offer the world is to help these staff along their journey so that they can then give back to other programs. And that's when we really feel a part of a network, not just our own.
Yeah, it was perfect. I knew when I heard, when I hear that someone has had a Kroka experience, like, this is going to be a good mesh with our kind of goals. It's different from just a camping trip. There's something kind of more, deeper that's happening. So you mentioned, there is an academic component to these programs. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. What does that look like? What is the content, and how is it structured?
I'm happy to talk to that. So we do offer you place-based experiential education throughout our entire semester, no matter where the students are, right? So we talked about, starting at the base camp and moving into the woods or into the desert or into right, the highlands of the Andes. So we do everything from teaching literature that's relevant. I think relevance, right, is the key piece of place-based, education, is that it makes sense. And I think that for so many students, that's a reason I think that they seek out these sorts of experiences, is because they want something that feels super relevant. So literature of the area, history of the area, the history of the people, the history of the plants and the place. What's been there before, what's there in that moment, why a place looks the way that it does. I think those same questions can be asked, right, in every context and every environment that we move through. So we do teach, natural sciences, humanities, which really encompasses theater and fine arts. So with, a ties to Waldorf education, all of our work is done by hand. There's no technology at all at any point of semester or on semester. And so all the work students do is handwritten. They make Book of Wisdom pages or portfolio pages as demonstrations of learning, which are also pieces of fine art, right? So they're encouraged to work toward making something look beautiful, in addition to it being informative and accurate as well. So that's integrated again through humanities. They use theater as a way of telling their story as they move along. A lot of semester, in really every semester, there are points of encounter, and we really value encounters. That's one of our kind of maybe one of the core elements of a semester are these interactions we have that are not planned, with, humans and communities along the route. And then theater is one way of telling the story, of what, we've been doing and what they've been up to. And then we also do, what could be called adventure leadership education. So everything that's involved in being a group, staying healthy, in our bodies and in the community, communicating and running an expedition in all of these different environments. So all of those things together, are, lumped into the academic program. We're accredited by Sterling College. So they accredit us for college credit, and then we're also a New Hampshire non-public school, and we're able to give high school credit as well for that work.
Cool. Yeah, that's fascinating. I just you mentioned staying healthy. That did strike me as something when you're out on expedition for a whole semester, in the winter, in the changing seasons. I mean, that strikes me. People will occasionally be sick, right?
They will undoubtedly be sick. Yes. It is a predictable thing. And the way it will move through a group of, with instructors, 15 people is very predictable. Absolutely. Yeah, it's something. And when I remember having a conversation with a school, a health education person, trying to convince them that really what we do is worth a health education credit because of the amount of, nutrition to keep your body moving through winter. To have the right kind of calories and enough calories takes a lot of intention, and education and knowledge to do that. And then, not to mention hygiene, and yeah, keeping your body safe and well. So,
And the
yeah.
students do before they leave on the expedition, part of their base camp studies is a wilderness first aid course. They all get a 16-hour WFHA certification, so they're prepared to take some responsibility for their health and responding to injuries, accidents that could come up on the program.
Yeah, that'd be essential, yeah.
And then there's a risk management component, which really, falls under that adventure leadership course as well. That in every, everything we do, the students are brought into risk management. They, at night when we have evening meetings and we circle up, there'll be, debriefing of the day and previewing the next day, and instructors working and bringing the students into the decision making about routes and decisions they're making. So that's another way of staying healthy.
Yeah, being yeah, feeling your a stake in the decisions are being made as a stakeholder. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, so in your reading through your website and the kind of the motto of Kroka is where consciousness meets wilderness, right? There's a lot of discussion about transformation of consciousness and development of will and which are yeah, I think anyone who's led or participated in expeditionary learning of any kind sees that happen, right? And I'm wondering about how you prepare and how you talk about that as a staff and what maybe what is the transformation of consciousness, the development of consciousness that happens in the context of these experiences.
So the development of willpower has often in outdoor education research been described as a product of expeditionary learning programs. You have to face a challenge, you overcome it, and that develops willpower to overcome a similar challenge in the future. Many years ago, we started talking at Kroka about the concept of the altruistic will. And of course, the altruism is doing things for others. And we know that humans as a society have an extraordinary willpower to build civilizations, to build skyscrapers, to build highways, to build bridges. all of which is an exercise of the human willpower, but in a very destructive way, in a way that's causing immense harm to the planet and to each other. And our mission at Kroka is to harness the will forces of our students, but put them to use in an altruistic way. So that's the altruistic will, is how can we consciously develop in our students the willpower to do good in the world? And that takes many forms. Liz talked about the service learning component, and that's an element on all the programs, is giving back and trying to do that as authentically as possible. Sometimes you can't plan it, but when you're traveling and you encounter someone or something that needs help, you change your itinerary and you say, we're not going to get to our destination today because this is now more important, and we're going to stop and give back and help here. I think the concept of consciousness also comes through in the way that we travel through the wilderness. And being Thoreau College, I know that you study the concept of wilderness as well, which is a fraught term. And the New England landscape where we're based is a patchwork landscape where there is no vast and endless wilderness as you think of when you think of that term. Instead, we're traveling through communities and on land that was once indigenous land and has been logged and regrown and developed and mined. And so this patchwork landscape, and as we travel through it, you really start to think about what is wilderness and what is my relationship as a human being to the natural world. And that develops into the consciousness and into the feeling that by traveling in a way that is in reciprocity with the natural world, where when we have to cut down a tree for firewood, we're doing so with an understanding of how we can harvest one tree and in doing so let other trees thrive by growing into that spot. And we can take the resources that we need to sustain ourselves while also giving back through the management of the land or the stewardship or the appreciation for the gifts that nature has to offer.
Yeah, I think I would almost I want to emphasize that, like what Ezra's saying. I think I came to Kroka having worked for or led outdoor trips for lots of different organizations through my adult life, and the way Kroka moves through the world is very different. And it has a sense of spirit and a sense of consciousness that has everything to do with that feeling of reciprocity, that like it's not just offering, it's not just being grateful, but it's like this, the way in which we can make a place better, through our relationship with the land and through, the way we make our own things that we use and we repair the things that we use. And there's this very a conscious relationship to the food that we eat and where it's coming from and how we source it, and the work that's done in the weeks leading up to leading, are about taking the food that was harvested from the farm in the fall and running it through the dehydrator 24 hours a day, right, for 3 weeks leading up to expedition to take it on the trail with us, and being thoughtful about choices we make along the way. Do we change the itinerary for this? Do we get in the van to make up time despite our intention? Do we? So that's, I think, another layer of kind of consciousness and thought. We're about to make the anoraks, a whole new set of anoraks that the winter semester, will wear and care for, get made here and then taken on trail and cared for by students. So,
You might have to say what an anorak
an over jacket, a canvas, this will
is.
be a waxed canvas over jacket, that really keeps like the nice warm puffies from getting spark holes and snagged on tree branches,
Gotcha.
and adds an extra layer of warmth and weather protection. So,
Beautiful.
yeah.
Cool.
And cotton is not only a traditional material for winter travel, but it's also a natural material. So when everything in the outdoors, all of our outdoor kit is now made from plastic, from nylons and fabrics that are synthetic, And when they end their life, they go in the trash. But when you have something made of cotton and the end of his life, it goes in the compost. And we can compost it and put it in the vegetable gardens and turn it into.
So from my experience in participating in and helping to lead some expeditions, you know, another dimension here, as well as staying healthy and navigating and some you know keeping yourself fed, there's just the social aspect, the group development aspect of being on expedition, which can be, yeah, it seems one of the powerful outcomes and also one of the greatest challenges is to keep the group together. And could you talk about that and how do you build those groups and keep them, you know, high morale and working together over especially these longer times on expedition.
One thing that I'll lead with, we do use what we call the code of conduct, which is our basically community agreement. And the students read it ahead of time. The parents are aware of it. We spend the first couple nights of semester reading it really thoroughly and even, reenacting it, working through scenarios so that everyone's on the same page, with expectations. And those really range from, not only just kind of, behavioral, but really how you carry yourself in community and what your responsibility is to each other. So those expectations are laid out really clearly right from the beginning. We do have one of the routines and rhythms of the day, no matter if we're in the front country or on trail, is having evening meeting, and closing every day, with a circle when, and that really is the time that the group is, led by the instructors to become increasingly more vulnerable with each other, through different, sharing prompts, through debriefing the day, through getting used to may one, like our fall semester right now, every night they make apologies and appreciations. And when you do that for over 100 days, you build, right? You start to really change habits and behaviors. So that's, I think that steadiness, having a small group, having skilled, thoughtful instructors who are facilitating this experience. Ezra, what else?
Well, you spoke to it in the beginning of the podcast a little bit today, Liz, but the schedule is rigorous. And for the first 3 weeks of the program, there's zero free time. The students really don't have any time in their day that's unstructured from first thing in the morning when they wake up until they go to bed. It's incredibly intense and socially demanding to participate in facilitated group activities from 6:30 in the morning until 9 at night, week in, week out, including the weekends. And the free time starts to come when you're on expedition because, wow, it's a beautiful day and the wind was at our back and we got to camp a couple hours early. But the foundation socially has been built by that point through shared experience and through challenging moments that the bonding that takes place in the intense crunch time leading up to expedition allows for a really natural social friendships through the whole community to unfold once expedition takes place.
Yeah, that's a really interesting framing. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, those moments of free time on trail or on the canoe trip is are really special and beautiful times of building social community. Yeah, beautiful. Well, I'm wondering if each of you have be willing to share a favorite moment or like a story from an expedition or from some or maybe a student's transformation that that sticks out when you ask when you think about what the kind of things that Kroka does and the impact that it has.
So I think I could tell a story of a student who was on fall semester last year, who, found Kroka, was not a Kroka kid. So this was the first experience. Somehow word of mouth had made it to him, came from a traditional, high achieving high school background and wanted, to do something a little different before college. And so it was first expedition, right? First real experience in the wilderness. And so getting to live through all of that newness, and the competence, right? I think competence and confidence are two words that come with expedition a lot. And, seeing that gained and then the way that experience. So this semester went through the desert Southwest, and when the expedition ended, the group went to landed at the border, at the US-Mexico border. And we it was amazing as the instructors how we could really see how the expedition skills, and sorry about that, I'm trying to make that go away. The expedition skills had this led this application to this front country experience of, this was November of 2024, at the wall and the border. And then we went, we were able to go into Mexico and spend 4 days living at a migrant shelter in Mexico. And this student in particular was so like, it's like the pieces, everything aligned the way that we hoped it would. And was so moved and transformed by that experience and understood his role in in moving forward and the privilege that he had in having this experience and how his role now is to work towards sharing that experience. And so that was one that was really beautiful. And like we are now, we still get letters and we still get essays that he's writing, where like he's able to take the meaning of that and move it forward into the world, which for me is one like that transference, right? The way to take those things and say, now what, is, yeah, really, really powerful.
Yeah, that's a great story. Yeah.
I
That's
think I'll
amazing.
tell my story in a slightly different direction, but 4 years ago, Kroka went through a transition where the founders stepped away from running the organization, and they called on three of us to become the co-directors. Myself and one of my other co-directors are both alumni from the semester programs, and Emily's a little bit older than I am. She's now raising a family and running a farm just up the road from Kroka. She was on the very first Kroka semester that took place back in 2004, and has chosen now to settle close to the campus and raise her family. There are at least a dozen other semester alumni who have made that same choice, so that the next generation of children who will attend Kroka semesters are the children of the alumni from the first programs who are growing up as part of the extended Kroka community. And when you look at the lifestyle choices that those alumni have made, they're in line with the values that Kroka has been teaching. And so the Kroka alumni who live in the community are growing food for the community as farmers. They're on the volunteer fire department and they respond to emergencies. They're teachers in the public school. They're working at the local bakery producing bread for the community. They're carpenters who are building houses for those who need them. So that is one of the other impacts of our work that the founders never would have anticipated.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, it is that's another it's the other side, I think, of those, the young people coming up, showing up to wanting to work and to be part of the staff, to see those alums and program participants stay around and help to build up the not only the organization but the surrounding community is something that we've started to see here too, which is so it really is yeah, there's a real direct impact you can see from that. So yeah, thank you for that, sharing that. Yeah, so we're coming up here to the top of the hour here. I'm just wondering, there's a lot of different components to things that Kroka does. If you're a person who's hearing about Kroka for the first time and you're interested in getting involved in some way, do you have a recommendation of how to do that, or how do you choose between these different opportunities, if you're let's say, 16, 17, 18 years old?
They should call the office and talk
Yeah.
to us. We love talking to people with real human voices over anything. So they should get in touch. You can go to the website, kroka.org, find semester. You can read about all the different semesters. You can submit inquiries or just call and have a conversation.
This is Kroka, Kroka.
Uh-huh.
Is it are these programs, are there waiting lists? Are there, what is the enrollment process or
It's
the
a good question. Right now, our admissions is rolling. We have just filled our 2026 winter semester. That process is closed and full. We are enrolling our two fall semesters for 2026, and are going to announce what our second fall semester for 2026 is shortly. And we offer sliding scale tuition, which is something I really want to emphasize. We do the same thing for our summer programs, all the way through our semester, and we give additional scholarship and financial aid support for families who need it. We work really, really hard to make our semesters accessible to the people who want to do them, who are willing to put down their phones, for 3 to 5 months, and do something that is hard, and find community. And we want them to be here if they want to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for sharing
Perfect.
that. And yeah, thank you both for talking with me here today.
Thanks so much, Jacob. We
Thank
appreciate
you
the
so much.
opportunity.
Thanks.